My name's Peter Sumpton, and this is the Marketing Study Lab podcast. A podcast for those that are thinking, have thought and are doing, or already have a marketing qualification. Or even if you haven't, and you just want to know that a little bit more about what good, happy marketing is. As we cover a whole host of marketing topics, I chat to some amazing guests, each one a superstar in their own niche. And if you have a burning marketing question already or after this episode, get in touch. We'll chat it through. peter@marketingstudylab.co.uk or find me on LinkedIn. The link is in the show notes. If you'd like to leave a review on iTunes, this will really help others find this podcast and spread the marketing word. Now let's get on with today's episode.
Your bedtime ritual. Hopefully it's not as bad as most people's. How many hours sleep should you be getting? Do you get them? In this week's top tip, that's what we'll be talking about. Sleep and how vitally important it is to your studies. But now it's time to introduce our guest, Jono Alderson from Yoast.com. Wow. Now I have to say at this point, the first few minutes of the audio isn't as good as it usually is for Marketing Study Lab. But we resolve this issue quite early on in the interview, so just stick with it as you really don't want to miss this one. Why don't you want to miss it? Well, Jono has over a decade of experience in web development, SEO, analytics, brand and campaign strategy, lead generation, ECRM, conversion rate optimization, and to top all that, just basically helping companies deliver SEO content, analytics and brand strategies at an international level. Oh, I can breathe now. Jono is also a keynote speaker with a passion that oozes through everything he does, which means he's absolutely perfect for this podcast. I hope you all agree, and believe me, if you don't right now, you will after this interview. With all this passion itching to come through in this interview, I thought I'd start by asking Jono, what is your favourite toast condiment?
I love this. So controversially, I'm a huge Marmite fan, which will divide the audience immediately. It is even more of a serious problem because at home, my wife hates Marmite, but loves peanut butter, and I hate peanut butter. So there's this real left-right divide going on. And anytime anybody fancies toast, it just divides things entirely, which is terrible. So we rarely eat toast because it just causes fallouts.
Division is usually good, though, apart from in family. It's more in business than in conversations and everything. Yeah. Speaking of conversations, let's move on to some topical great questions. Honestly, it's seamless, this. I'm getting better and better every day. So tell us your story. What's been the formula that's brought you to this stage in your career as special ops, which sounds really intriguing, at Yoast.com?
I don't know what that means either. So I don't know if there is a formula. There's just a kind of chaotic soup that seems to have turned into something. So I guess once upon a time, I was a bedroom web developer, didn't really know what I was doing, but learned as I went and ended up building small websites for local businesses like butchers, bakers, plumbers, etc. And worked with a couple of small local agencies, churning out one of those a week for peanuts and never really changing the world. And I think just through a whole bunch of luck and being in the right place at the right time and just wanting to do more, I kind of fell up a ladder. So I joined a big agency, a relatively small agency in a bigger city, and that grew tremendously. And we ended up, I think just the case of being in the right place at the right time was a huge advantage. It was quite, as the SEO industry was maturing, as the agency we were working in was growing, as the financial crisis hit in the UK, certainly, businesses stopped spending huge amounts of money on flashy media and advertising and started saying, how do we make what we have work harder and work better? So being at the intersect of web development and SEO and analytics was the perfect place. And we did really well kind of doing more sophisticated marketing. So did that for a few years, learned a ton about business and development processes and agency life and politics, which were areas I hadn't really touched before. And then gradually became quite unhappy with agency world. I got really, really frustrated. And I think this is the thing when I look back that really has driven me is frustration with the status quo. and I want to change things, I want to fix things. And agency world felt broken. It felt like there was always this trade-off between time and resource and quality, which everyone will know that triangle where you can't have something fast and cheap and good, you can only pick two. And it felt like right at the heart of the agency model, that was dysfunctional. And you were always cutting corners or trying to survive or trying to work out ways to ship stuff and not upset the client. And that felt a bit broken. So I ran away from agency world and worked for a company called Linktex, who had a big SEO platform, which did monitoring and analysis of markets. And I learned a ton about data science and big analytics and marketing platforms and integrations and stuff, which was really cool. They sold, which was really good, nice, and then it was the right time to leave. So I went to work for, this is a long story, isn't it?
No, it's fine.
An agency called Distilled in London. I vowed that I would never go back to agency world, but Distilled have such a great reputation as like the smart people. And they're not big and they're not broken and they do grown-up work for grown-up companies. It was really nice. So I was principal consultant over there and got to do really fun consultancy projects for brands like... I don't even know which ones I can talk about, but big brands all around the world kind of doing big, how do we change our business and how do we win market level strategy, which was awesome, and big, complex technical stuff. So I did my time there. And then I've known Yoast, the person. So this is always confusing. Yoast, Y-O-A-S-T, is the brand. Yoast, J-O-O-S-T, is the person, the CEO behind
the
brand.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Just like one of those needs to change, but never mind. So I've known him for a few years, or for multiple years, through various events, and we've always chatted about WordPress and SEO and stuff. And he made me the offer to come and work for them and to do odds and ends and undefined stuff other than kind of just be smart and have ideas about things and chip in on projects. So that's what I'm doing now. So it's been, yeah, I don't know if there's a formula other than just a continual frustration with the limits of where I am and what I'm doing and wanting to do more and wanting to fix the stuff around me. And I've gone from fixing little websites to fixing agencies to fixing the data agencies have to fixing the whole internet now, which is quite fun.
Fixing the whole internet. All I think about when you say that is the IT Crowd episode where he's got that black box and he says, "This is the internet." Just imagine you've got a little box in the corner and that's the whole world and you're just tinkering with it a little bit.
Yeah, well, pretty much. Well, like that's not far off what WordPress is. Like, we're over 30% of the internet now, and Yoast has a big chunk of that. So, yeah, I think we definitely have the black box in the Netherlands out in the office. We should get one, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, cool. Love it. Can you explain what Yoast.com does?
I can. So, most people will be familiar with WordPress, I guess, which is a content management system and a platform for blogging or building websites or running businesses online, etc. It has something like a 31% market share of every site on the internet, which is insane. WordPress out of the box is really, really good if you want to run a blog or have a little website. If you want to do marketing and reach a market and be really, really good at SEO, you need to do more than WordPress's vanilla stuff. Yoast is the de facto plugin and extension for WordPress SEO. So we run on millions, something like over 9 million websites run our plugin just to get the basics right. We obviously do a lot more than that. We have plugins for other CMSs like Magento and Typo3, if you've come across those, other use cases. And we do a bunch of training and education and courses and support stuff and all sorts of bits. But the core of it is, if you're running a CMS and you want to do better SEO, plug Yoast in and it handles 80, 90% of the behind the scenes stuff and just gets it right in a way that most of these platforms don't out of the box, which is quite cool. We're like the SEO backbone of the web.
Yeah, I'm an advocate of that. I use both WordPress and Yoast.
Yes. Awesome.
Of course. So I'm one of those 9 million. Just another statistic.
yep, just a number somewhere in that list. I'll look you up later.
Nice one. Yeah. Just on the internet in the corner there. Right, let's get back to just pure and simple SEO then.
Yeah,
it's come quite a long way since the simple keyword and all the dark arts that used to come along with that. Yep. As let's face it, Google's algorithms have got a lot more complex. What's SEO all about in today's digital world?
So I think in some ways it's a lot simpler than it used to be, but it's also a lot more sophisticated. So Google, in some ways, are now very, very smart. They understand what people want. They understand what good looks like. So Gone are the days where they're measuring and counting the number of links you have and analyzing what keywords you put on their page. And now where they're really getting to is a world where they use combinations of machine learning and stuff that's rapidly approaching kind of AI levels of smartness to assess how good your content is, page by page by page. And that's obviously a hugely ambiguous, like, what does good mean? And maybe our definition might vary from their definition, might vary from somebody else's definition, but they're smart enough to understand all of that. And on a person by person, URL by URL, search by search level, they understand what good is. And that's what they're trying to optimize for. So all the tactics that you might have used to try and tactically make your website look good are now going to stop working. And what you've actually got to do is have a good website. Like, that's not radical, but essentially that's the crux of it. And that might be, is the technical architecture strong? Are you communicating in a way that aligns to people's understandings and needs? Are you demonstrating that you're trustworthy? And a myriad of other factors. And the thing that I keep coming back to as, and actually rewind a second, the challenge of that is that's not just SEO. It's technology, it's marketing, it's psychology, it's brand, it's copywriting, and it's so many other things. And the real challenge I see that a lot of people have with SEO is how do you get everything right? How do you make all of those good? That's an organizational level challenge, no longer a silo of marketing level challenge. And the thing I keep coming back to, and the best answer from this kind of ongoing question of what is SEO and how does it change and where's it going, is that people search. And a huge part of the process, whether it's the beginning, the middle, or the end, of the process that people go through when they're making purchase or conversion or research decisions, whether it's that I want new car insurance or I need to buy some light bulbs or I'm considering going on holiday, whatever it is, some part of that process would involve me searching in a platform for a thing. Now, the experience that I have as a result of that search and managing that experience is SEO. And that might mean put different keywords on my page. It might mean that if I'm a restaurant, train my chef better or source better ingredients or get better reviews or invest in better customer service or find ways to get local reviewers talking about me. All of these things are SEO because they influence the experience people have when they search. And that's really where it's getting to now. And it's hugely challenging for organizations to think that way because it's no longer just a thing they can optimize in the corner. What they need is good websites or whatever that means.
Brilliant. I took a workshop with some students last weekend, and I think I said it about 5 or 6 times during the day. And it's a case of when you're talking about SEO or websites or just digital in general, and there's tips and tricks and stuff, but essentially it's just don't be a dickhead. Just yep. Don't.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good rules of life. I should print that out and put it on the wall. I get told off periodically when I do consulting work for being fairly blunt with clients and saying things as they are. I don't think I've ever gone quite that far, but that's I'm not far from it.
Brilliant. So in your profile, your LinkedIn profile, you boldly state you create better digital strategies to do better marketing. What are most organizations getting wrong, and how do you or they actually do better?
So I think I just touched on some of it, that historically many organizations have had a kind of minimal viable effort model where they throw a website on the internet and they invest a little bit of time and money in making it look okay and making sure the copy is okay and making sure that the user experience is okay and that there aren't too many errors. That will get you ranked in the top 20 because there are, in whatever sector you're in, 10 websites which are doing a good job or a great job. And now the challenge is convincing organizations who've historically waited for business to come to them with an okay website, and I hope that they can convert some of it, that they need to try harder and that they are going to struggle to create a direct measurement of cause and effect between let's make this page really, really good and let's rank better and let's generate lots of traffic, because it's not just a case of making the page better. As I was saying, it's things like they need to increase their reviews and their reputation and their how memorable their brand is and the color of their logo, and maybe their typography is a bit off and maybe somebody on another website says something nasty about them. All of that needs addressing. And even if you just do one part of that, you don't really move the needle. So the challenge is convincing senior stakeholders in brands to be brave enough to aim for good rather than just good enough. And that's hard, it's scary, it's expensive. It's a way of thinking that they've never embraced. Like, best case scenario, you get a CEO who believes this and invests a bit of money and they go, okay, we're gonna do a test case and we're gonna make 3 really good pages. And nothing happens because their customer service is still crap or their products are too expensive or one of a myriad of other things. So the challenge is convincing people that in order to compete, they need to be radically better. And there is no incremental step towards that. And all the models and all the behaviors they have always had is, how do we be good enough? And if a competitor is better, let's leapfrog them. If a competitor is cheaper, let's undercut them. And it's one step, one step, one step, and it's iterative. And that just doesn't work anymore, because all it takes is one of those competitors to beat you on a few of those fronts, and you can't catch up. And that there's no model that allows you to do so when you're just trying to chip away at it. So yeah, you've got to scare people or convince them or compel them to radically improve. That's challenging.
Very, very challenging.
Yeah, it's great consultancy feedback. Hey guys, be better.
Yeah.
They really like it. It's great.
Don't be a dickhead, just be better. There we go. It writes itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's much shorter.
Is it all about mobile or smart devices in terms of engagement now, or is there still a need to consider the more static devices, laptops and desktops?
So there's a revolution which we're, I think, starting to peek through, which is that everything is now mobile. It's mobile first, it's mobile in totality. Obviously, the way that we behave as consumers has changed, and huge parts of our research and decision-making process, certainly the kind of higher funnel stuff where you're browsing and considering, tend to happen much more frequently on a mobile device. There's still definitely a place for complex processes like transactions and form completions, etc., being easier on desktop. But certainly mobile is where it's at. I think the whole industry has made a bit of a mistake, though, and they've kind of missed the point, in that it's not that we've gone through a mobile revolution that everything has become mobile. It's that everything needs to be device agnostic, and that you don't know what device somebody's going to be on. And yes, well, like, for a few years, tablets were a thing, but now they're not really. And if we all made the mistake of going, okay, we need a desktop site, a tablet site, and a mobile site. We never needed that. We needed a website which didn't make assumptions on the device somebody was on, but provided them with a good experience regardless, because now there are smartwatches, and tomorrow there will be another thing, and there's the voice revolution going on in the background. Like, we need to think in a way where we have a business that has a service or a product and a proposition that needs to be consumable and to provide a good experience regardless of the way that somebody's accessing it. So all your design, all your content, all your marketing and messaging needs to anticipate that you don't know how or where or in what scenario it's going to be consumed. That's hard. That's don't build one website, build some omni-fluid, perfect, dynamic, responsive thing, which takes more time and money and thinking. Like, conceptually, that's quite hard, but that's where people need to be aiming. Certainly, it would be the wrong move to say we need to invest heavily in mobile. It would be a much better move to go, we need to invest heavily in being reactive and flexible, stripping away all of that.
Okay, so part of that is data, and data is part of everything, really.
Yep.
But it's so easy to become overwhelmed with the amount of data that we can actually get our hands on with even small pieces of software, devices or platforms.
Yep, it just vomits it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. How do you cut out all that crap, and what is it we should be looking for?
So the mistake people make is to go looking and trying to find stuff. Like, before you go looking, know the answer to that question. Understand what your business objectives are, how those translate into the goals of the environment that you're measuring. So if your business objective is to sell lots of things, your goals relate to conversions and transaction volumes and revenue generation, and then understand the KPIs that measure those. And that's going to be more sophisticated than how much money did we make. It's going to be, what's the conversion rate through this process? What's the propensity of people to take this valuable action, etc.? Map those together. Understand explicitly what the KPIs and the metrics are that reflect those performances, and then monitor those. Like, as soon as you open up something like Google Analytics and say, I'm going to go and look for some insight, you'll spend an hour, you'll segment something in three different dimensions, you'll pivot, you'll change the date, you'll compare, you'll go, oh, that's interesting, and then it'll be lunchtime, and you've not achieved anything. Like, understand what you're looking for before you go. These tools are phenomenally powerful for generating data out the box. What people don't do is think about what success looks like and what they're actually trying to understand. Once you've got that in place, then you can go big. So we've done this with Yoast.com recently. We have a really nice matrix that has a column of what are all our different business objectives, and there's five or six kind of top level organization strategy level stuff. Then there are a series of goals which say, in relation to the website, what are we trying to do to drive these? And then we've got, okay, here are the 40 KPIs subsected into those areas which matter, which if they go up, we should party. If they go down, we should be firing people. If they're within this range, everything's fine. What are our targets over the next year, et cetera? And then we've set up Google Analytics and a whole bunch of other tools. And we've now got a really sophisticated setup that I don't think I've ever seen a more sophisticated GA setup than Yoast.com. And it's tracking multiple dimensions and all sorts of custom stuff and doing some really smart things, but only because all of that pipes out into a framework that we know what good looks like, we know where we need to react, and nobody ever needs to spend time rummaging and exploring, trying to find some kind of magical stardust in the GA platform. So yeah, understand what you're looking for, and before never spend time just looking, unless you really got time to burn.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody has nowadays. For me, it always fundamentally goes back to the very start, and that's the part that people miss. And it's a case of what's the KPIs, the goals, the objectives,
yep.
And then you start to build on that. Whereas because everything is so accessible nowadays, everybody, like you just said, yep. just jumps on it. And they spend hours just looking at information.
Yeah, and I've called out the analytics vendors a few times on this because they perpetuate this problem. Like the homepage of Google Analytics used to have a quote from this woman with a photo that said something like, "I installed Google Analytics and then I found insights which grew my business by 500%." It's like, where did you find these insights? Show me the button you clicked to generate those insights. No, that's not what happened. Like what it should say is, and we had a good old think about how we would model and map on our understanding of performance. Then we integrated with a sophisticated setup to monitor and identify those KPIs. We set up alerting systems to acknowledge if they went over or under predefined performance thresholds, and then we grew our business. But obviously that doesn't sell quite as well as we installed a magic button. So yeah, it's their fault. They've missold to us.
That's fantastic. Yeah, it'd be amazing if people actually just told the truth about how these things actually happen.
Yep, absolutely.
I just want to get specific about lead generation for a minute. Mm. Some people see it as simply saying, give us your contact details. What are the best tactics for lead generation?
You need to solve the problems people have today without trying to sell to them. So this is quite SEO specific, and it's a challenge that every business has, is that most businesses operate on a model where you build it and you hope they'll come. And if they don't, you run AdWords and Facebook marketing to bring people to your website. Like you build the thing and you wait for an audience and wait for sales to happen. SEO doesn't work like that. You need to have compelling and useful and interesting enough content that you can attract people to your website who are asking questions and thinking about things and maybe aren't at the stage where they're ready to buy yet. And even then, if you manage to attract some of them, chances are they're not at the point of purchase and they are trying to solve their own problem manually, or they are considering their options, or they're picking brands, or they're just hoping for some advice and support. So you need to work out a way that you can engage them at that stage. And that's quite often not going to be a buy our thing now or spend some money with us, or even necessarily a fill out this form and give us your details. What it might be is a, hey, was this useful? Would you like to join our email newsletter? And we'll give you tips like this every week. And you need to start finding ways that you build pools of those audiences who aren't yet at the point of conversion, but you might be able to nurture and nudge over the period of a week, a month, a year. And many of those people won't ever buy. They won't ever be customers. But if you market to them well and you engage them, they will talk about your content. They'll share it. They will link to you. They will retweet your stuff. And then you've got more chance of reaching the kind of audiences who might convert. And that's a much more sophisticated way of thinking about it. And it does require that you convince stakeholders to market to people who will never buy. And that's a hard sell, right? Because they're all built on this business of, we could build the website, we'll get some adverts, so we'll get 100 people and one of them will buy. And the new model is, we'll build a website, we will empower people to solve their own problems with content that doesn't benefit us in any way, to build a huge pool of people who like us in the hopes that some of them will influence others and some of them might convert in a year. But that's the only way you can do it. Like the kinds of things which Google will rank in the results aren't the kinds of things that say, buy our thing now. With the exception of explicitly transactional stuff. Like if somebody is looking to buy the thing now, fine. But that's 1% of your potential audience. And if you want to be a brand and you want to grow and you want to survive and you want to be omni-channel, you need more than just to fulfill the people who are at the point of purchase. You need to be winning hearts and minds of larger audiences and growing your footprint. That's hard, but that's really the only way to do it.
So looking towards the future then, or the next 5 years, if you like, How do you think the way we connect with consumers is going to change?
So I'm really scared about this. I think that we will lose the ability to connect with customers in a lot of places. I've talked about this quite a lot recently. I think people are underestimating the impact of what we're loosely calling the assistant revolution. So voice is a thing and people use voice search. It's surprisingly popular despite not seeing much evidence of it in the wild, because people don't do it on buses and in offices, but people on the road will quite often use their phones, Siri, their software to search by voice, and that's changed the environment. It changes the types of experiences people have. It changes the types of results that these services give. You get much less research process. That's interesting. The next step is scary, because the next step takes us from voice to assistants. So Siri is an assistant, but also your Google Home is an assistant. Your Alexa is an assistant. Your Google assistant on your phone will make decisions independently of you. And not all of this is voice. Like, voice is the interface to assistants. So let me give you an example. I recently bought a new laptop, and I'd done a whole lot of research. I spent an hour or so browsing through different websites and brands and looking at them, and then forgot about it and put it down. Like, the next day, my phone, which is an Android running some version or other, prompted me with a Google message saying, hey, we think you might be interested in one of these brands. So it had stepped into my research and purchase making decision-making process and created a subset that it knew I would like, based on proximity, availability, price, evidence of past preferences, etc. As a result of that, there were 10 brands I never saw. And if you're one of those brands, you no longer have the ability to run a PPC advert or get in front of me on Facebook or attract me to your website or rank in results. You cannot now access me as a consumer because you weren't a good fit based on Google's understanding. And this is like day one. This is going to get more and more and more sophisticated. They're going to look at my calendar and my email and everything else that's integrated to. And as people gradually, for example, make their homes more intelligent, at some point I will buy a smart microwave. Eventually, like in the next 10, 20 years, at some point I will go, okay, I'm replacing my microwave. I may as well get one that hooks up to my router. Then my Google Home knows what microwave I have, which means it understands to a degree my eating habits, etc. It's going to recommend restaurants. It's going to recommend home furnishings. All of this stuff is going to remove brands' ability to advertise to me, because these systems will use data and infer things based on my preferences, and then it will be rare for them to make actual decisions on my behalf, but they will definitely exclude brands from the consideration set. And that's fine today because we have the tools to combat that. So if you are, as a brand, more expensive or have a poor reputation or aren't the closest, you advertise. You pay money to a service, or you rank higher, or you throw ads in front of somebody. All of those tools will go away. You won't have the ability to inject yourself into a consideration set where you're not a good fit. And that's all advertising and marketing today. That's what we do. That's the reason for our existence. That's really scary. I think the only answer to how brands cope in that scenario is what I was saying before, is to win hearts and minds of people who aren't yet in the buying cycle 6 months, a year before they might ever be interested in your product, which means marketing to everybody. It means being a good brand, and it means having a good website. Like, this is all SEO is now. It's don't be shit, be a better company, have a better website.
And I think it feels to me like it's definitely, and everybody I speak to, it's exactly the same. It's all about long term, not short term. And that can be so difficult, again, to get across to an MD or an FD or whoever it might be.
Yeah, because they're built on monthly and weekly numbers in, numbers out, spend and return, etc. And so I should be clear, short term stuff can work. There are a whole bunch of strategies and tactics and clever stuff you can do if you want to make a load of money this month. But that comes at the cost of either making a lot less money a year from now when you've been outmoded and your competitors have eaten your market, or you aren't interested in investing in brand. Like, you don't care about your reputation. You don't care about your logo. You don't care about continuing to employ people who presumably have mortgages and families in the next months and years to come. So there are shortcuts for short-term immediate stuff, but it comes at a direct trade-off for survivability. Like, the only way you look at the growth of Amazon and of Google into sectors, things like Google Flights and Amazon now doing delivery of Christmas trees, for example, is going to take a huge bite out of every garden center in the world's market share. You can't just fight month to month to month. You need a strategy for being a brand that people have a relationship about and with and care about, so that you can continue to market to them as your routes to market diminish. The behemoths will continue to eat market shares. Your competitors will continue to outmode you, and people's Google assistants and Alexas and mobile phones will continue to exclude you from consideration sets if you don't have a plan to be relevant and to be loved. And that's hard for MDs and CFOs. So a very alien way of thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Jono, are you ready for some quick fire questions then?
I'm not, but we'll do it anyway.
Name one must-read business book.
Oh, so I really struggle with business books. I don't think I've ever successfully read a business book.
That doesn't surprise me.
I get bored. I read so much sci-fi and fantasy and weird big stuff that I find myself like a third of the way through and I'm like, where are the wizards? When does the dragon appear? Like, where's the spaceship? And I get bored and read something more interesting instead.
I think you just hit on a niche there, actually. You could actually sure. write a book that is based on business or SEO or whatever, but have it based
set in the sci-fi fantasy yeah. universe. Yeah, I'm doing that as soon as I get off this. I'm gonna go and do it. It's gonna be awful, but I'll do it anyway.
See, we give value for free even to the guests. Look at that.
Yep.
So are you going to give us a must-read business book, or are we
I really can't. I've genuinely okay. never read one. I think I've tried dozens. I've got a shelf full here in front of me. I know, actually, anything that Avinash Kaushik has written about analytics. Like, a lot of my thinking on frameworks for objectives, goals, KPIs, etc., are at least in part pillaged from stuff he's read. What's his book? Web Analytics 2.0, I think. It's a bit dated now, but the thinking and the concepts are really strong around understanding a framework for defining metrics and measuring stuff.
What is the last thing you Googled?
30th of March, August. So I have a weird side hobby. I run with my wife a site called daysoftheyear.com, which lists all of the weird holidays and quirky days of the year. So today is, he says, loading it. Today is International Programmers Day, which is wonderful. It's also Positive Thinking Day, Celiac Awareness Day, Peanuts Day, Fortune Cookie Day, Defy. So like today, there's like dozens of things going on today, and people celebrate these all around the world. We built a website about a decade ago, and it's become like a world-leading authority, which is really weird, really, really weird. And I was doing some quick look at the stats this morning, and we've started ranking really, really high for dates, which is such an odd search. Like, I don't know who searches 13th of September, but people do, and we do really well on that. So that's that was quite fun. So I was looking at some of the stats.
I've actually used that site before quite a few times.
Content marketing.
And that is no joke. What is your most used app at the moment?
Trello. I live my life and run my life entirely out of Trello. It's task lists on steroids. And I fudged and iterated a system of optimizing my kind of day-to-day, week-to-week. What are my tasks? What are my responsibilities? What are the big projects? What's the little five-minute jobs? All of that goes straight out of my head and into a system in Trello. So that any given time, I'm not worrying about, do I need to go shopping? I need to fix the shed. Where are we going on holiday? All of that sort of stuff, as soon as it's bubbled up, gets categorized into Trello. And then I can sit down for 10 minutes one evening and go, okay, I'm going to pick off these three jobs. I'm going to update that. And my whole life just lives in there. Like everything from do the laundry to we're thinking about refurbishing the living room. Like all of it is categorized in there. I absolutely live out of it. It's great.
What's your favourite theory, concept, or methodology?
That's a difficult question. That's a really difficult question. I don't know. Theories, concept, or methodologies. I'm going to be really boring and talk about the analytics stuff again. Like, it's so strong. All of the problems I find with all of these businesses where you're trying to say, be ambitious, be brave, be better, don't be shit, don't settle for the default. All of the stakeholders and all the decision makers are limited by their modeling of what success looks like. And they go, we have a website, we have an advertising budget. How many dollars does every dollar of spend return? And until you can change that mode of thinking, you can't achieve anything. You can't get them to invest in great content, in improving quality, etc. So the kind of Avinash-derived fudged version of building frameworks that connect business objectives in stakeholder language through to specific digital goals, through to KPIs with targets and thresholds and frameworks in one single model. Yeah, a lot of this is in the Avinash book. Have a look. That process of saying, okay, you say on one hand that you want to grow your market and you want to have a great reputation, but the only thing you're measuring is revenue. Actually, here's a much better flow from, we want to grow our market, therefore you need organic reach, therefore you need these frameworks of activity, therefore you need these KPIs, or we want to be loved, therefore you need a great net promoter score, therefore you need a budget for these type of activities. And just the simple act of connecting the bullshit that the stakeholders spout about what they think that success looks like, when they really mean we want lots of money, into something which is measurable and tangible in a framework that you can put numbers on, gives you permission to say, I know you're grumpy that revenue is down, but you said your words that reputation was really important and these metrics are doing really well, and here's what that's that achieving. It allows you to do that in a much more grown-up way that stops them just getting scared and changing their mind. Like, the biggest killer for these kinds of strategies and transformation are CEOs being, or stakeholders being, convinced to dip their toe enough to try it and then getting scared and changing their mind again, and they fudge and they fuddle and they try a bit and then their business fails. So you've got to give them a way to a framework that they can't wriggle out of. And the only way you do that is by trapping them with their words. So you said this, we agreed to this, here is how it's doing. It's great. Trap the hippos.
I like the fact that MDs and people at directorship level and above, that they're comfortable with being accountable for numbers and figures from a financial point of view, but any other accountability that's to do with numbers, figures, like you say, for relationship or awareness or whatever it might be, they shy away from massively.
Oh yeah. So one of the most fun things I do with these kinds of businesses is every business is different and all of their metrics and definitions of success should be different too. But there are two metrics which are almost universal across these, which are task completion rate and satisfaction rate. So regardless of what the website is meant to do, if you have a survey or something which asks people, what were you here to do? And you give them the drop down of find pricing information, research, buy a thing, whatever. Were you able to do it? Yes or no? And how would you rate your experience out of 10? And you pipe that back into your Google Analytics and you suddenly get all this data that says, you know what? People who are looking for product support information say that they have a bad experience when they come from this channel. And then what can you do but fix that? Because you know that people who are unhappy aren't spending money, or at least they're not spending money again. They're not telling their friends, they're not engaged, they're not endorsing, they're not linking, etc. So you suddenly take all of that, you take it away from the money, and you go, you know what? People who aren't happy about things they're trying to do are probably where we should focus. But many of those tasks aren't going to be spend money. It's going to be, I had an FAQ, I wanted to get a refund, I had a question, I was trying to find the phone number. It makes it real, it makes it human, it forces them to react. That's a fun trap.
Yeah, but again, it just goes back to the fact that you put any part or a friction in a sales funnel and it is a blocker. It's just simple, but and you need to remove those parts to get to that end sale, be it long-term, short-term, whatever it might be.
And I think the other challenge with that is that, along with businesses being settling for okay and just iterating, is there's this culture, and I hear this so many times, where people say, stop aiming for perfect. Like, we'll go with good enough, we'll get MVP and we'll improve it. Stop aiming for perfect. No, perfect is exactly what you should be aiming for. And every day you should be taking at least one tiny step towards perfect. I can't remember which book it was or which blog, maybe a business book that I read. There was a concept of distance to perfect is a really good metric. Like, if we understand what a perfect thing looks like and what perfect performance looks like, how far away from that are we as a percentage or as a metric or whatever, and then make that the target, like chase perfection. Because otherwise one of your competitors will beat you on something, or a braver CEO will invest more money in not being shit, and then suddenly your business fails. Like, the time it takes for business to fail is getting faster and faster, or less and less, because it's so easy just to be better. Like, you can write a web page of content that's 10 times better than your biggest competitor today, like this afternoon. It doesn't take a huge amount of resources. It just takes the braveness to focus on that and to choose to invest in that rather than other stuff.
Final question, and probably the hardest one of the lot. You're stuck on a desert island with one sci-fi or fantasy book. Which one is it?
That's really hard. How long am I stuck on the island for? Indefinitely?
Indefinitely, yep.
Wow. So it needs to be something I can reread.
Yeah, because you've kept the internet in the corner and it's blown up and the whole world's just decimated because it doesn't work.
Oh, that's really tough. I think if I want to read it over and over and over again, Dune. I think June. Like, I really like the June universe. I've read it a dozen times already. It's never going to change the world. Well, they did, but it's like, it's flat enough now that I can safely reread it periodically without getting too bored. That's an easy win.
Final question. If people want to find out more about Yoast.com, get in touch with you, where should they go?
So Yoast.com is probably a good answer to that question. go have a look. We've got all the stuff for WordPress and the other CMSs and SEO training and all sorts of bits. I'm there, but I'm also on at John O. Alderson on Twitter or various other places. I'm easy enough to Google. I'm also speaking at a ton of events. They're all listed on my website and on the Yoast site. I should take this opportunity also to plug YoastCon, which is our big SEO conference in February in Nijmegen, which is in the southeast corner of the Netherlands, near the German border. That's going to be really, really fun. We've got a ridiculous speaker lineup that includes me, Rand Fishkin, Geraldine Deruta, a bunch of others. It's going to be really awesome. I'm really looking forward to that. Come and see me there and we'll hang out and we'll talk nonsense about books and futurology and where it's all going.
Brilliant. Jono, can't thank you enough for joining us today. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, great fun. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, I hate to say I told you so, but in this episode, I think I told you so because Jono brought the value. He really did there. Fantastic. Once again, thanks, Jono, for joining us. And let's just talk about what we can take away from that, amongst other things, and there's just 4 points I want to touch on. The first one is, let's just get SEO right. It's more than just keywords. We are more advanced than that now. As Jono stated, it's technology, marketing, psychology, branding, and it's also copywriting. You need to go further than just words. But the best rule of thumb to remember is, just don't be a dickhead. Consider your customer and what they search for, as at some point in the purchase process, they will search. Just be there when they want to find you and make it easy for them to find you. It's also massively important that we invest time into digital communication channels, including our websites. Good just isn't good enough anymore. It needs to be exceptional. If the channels you're using to communicate your message aren't great, you can be sure your competitors will be. And that gives them an advantage. Jono spoke about this device agnostic and making the point that not everything should be made for mobile first. We should never make the assumption over what hardware our customers will be using. And finally, lead generation today is much more than just a contact us form. We need to be solving people's problems without being salesy, pushy, or demanding. Compelling, useful, and interesting content will always win in the long term, as it creates an engagement that is more powerful than consistent sales offers, which only serve to drive the price down with short-term, short-lived success. I know there's a lot more we can learn from Jono, but they are just a couple of little takeaways that I got from my fantastic chat with the man. Hope you enjoyed it. What are the effects of getting a really bad night's sleep? If you have a bad sleep ritual or don't think you're getting enough sleep, this tip will show you how important it is to get your regular 6, 7, 8, or even 9 hours. Before we find out how many of those hours you should be getting and provide you with some simple yet effective tips for a better night's kip, the results of a poor sleep pattern can reduce the success you have within your studies, as it basically causes 4 fundamental issues. 1, memory issues. 2, trouble concentrating. 3, mood changes. And 4, weakened immunity, which can obviously lead to illness. The National Sleep Foundation suggests that adults should be getting between 7 to 9 hours a night. So that's a great start if you're getting in between this number of hours. But to really pave the way for a better night's sleep, you can follow these simple yet effective steps. Stick to a sleep schedule. Always, first and foremost. Create a relaxing bedtime ritual. Exercise daily. Create the ideal temperature in your bedroom and also remove all sound and light. Make sure you sleep in comfort, get a good mattress. Try not to drink alcohol and avoid caffeine, anything that can steal sleep away from you. And finally, and wait until the end of this episode, which is coming up right now, turn off electronics before you enter the bedroom. Good night. God bless. Thank you so much for joining us today on Marketing Study Lab. It really means the world that you're listening to this out there. And hopefully I've provided you some value. If you're looking to know more about what Marketing Study Lab does and is about, go to marketingstudylab.co.uk or get in touch with me personally, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or feel free to email me at peter@marketingstudylab.co.uk. Happy marketing.